Ouch.
I mean, you probably understand where I'm coming from. So
I think Nick just spit beer out his nose.
It almost came out my ears.
Hi, everybody. This is the Craft Will Never Die podcast. My name is Blake Weber, and I'm joined by Nick Key, also known as Key Woodworks, and Jason Hibbs, also known as Bourbon Moth Woodworking. And you can find me at the Weber Wood Shop. All three of us are on Instagram and YouTube, but you can find us collectively at Craft Will Never Die on Instagram. We're recording remotely from three different states around the country. I'm in California, Nick is in Kentucky, and Jason is in Oregon. But once again, our microphones have brought us together, and we are super stoked to bring you episode 10 of the Craft Will Never Die podcast. What is going on, guys?
That was my lead into asking Nick about Africa. Dude, you just got back from Africa.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming. Thanks, Jason.
What happened? Did you, you survived, obviously. No snake bites?
Yeah. Nope. No typhoid, no malaria, no snake bites, no lion attacks. We're all good.
How many lions did you see?
I saw one very small lion. They called it a house cat, but it was ferocious. Yep. Actually, it was kind of weird. We didn't see any African wildlife that you would go and see when you go to Africa, right? So Lion King was a total lie. I saw dogs, goats, cows. I actually saw a camel, and that was pretty much it for wildlife.
It's a little disappointing, I'm not going to lie.
Where in Africa were you again?
Uganda. And we were in, I guess it's a district called Iganga. It's spelled I-Ganga.
Uganga?
No, Iganga.
Iganga, Uganda. it's east of Kampala. That's the capital. So it's kind of like out in the countryside.
Are they known for their wildlife there?
No. So no. They're...
Well, that might have had something to do with it. I'm just...
Right. Had I known that, I would have been prepared to not see stuff, but... Like, I was on the edge of my seat, like, I can't wait to see, like, cheetahs running across the plains, and yeah, I was totally wrong. Not really safari, but beautiful, beautiful country. About 4 days of travel, it was just crazy long travel. Like, I tell you what, if I never have to fly for the rest of the year, or maybe even next year, it'll be too soon. 8 hours on one plane, sitting in the airport for a couple hours, and then 8 hours again on another plane, oh, so boring. And my butt, like, still hurts.
Can't do any woodworking on a plane.
No, none.
Can't even whittle. They won't let you take a knife on the plane.
Yeah, no, nothing.
I just had a brilliant idea. What if we start our own airline for, like, crafty woodworkers and stuff, and it's just a flying wood shop?
Ooh, I like that.
Because, like, let's be honest. Like, we wouldn't have, like, chisels and things like that. You could hijack a plane with a chisel, but no terrorist is going to pick up, like, a grizzly, you know, cabinet table saw and run up to the front and try and hijack the plane.
That's right.
There's a certain level of safety with, like, big tools.
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't know. I think it'd be fun, like, on a long
just
trip.
A flying wood shop.
Build a table? That'd be cool.
That would be awesome. And if the plane, like, if anything happens to the plane, like a wing falls off, you could just build another one and fasten it on, and then you're good to go.
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe.
We're onto something. Oh, and dust collection would be awesome, because the toilets on there is like, you know?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. It would just suck everything out.
Just open a window.
Cha. All right. Just throwing, my ideas aren't always good, but sorry.
There's still ideas.
No, I think you're onto something for sure.
So overall, Africa, good experience, good time.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was amazing.
What exactly were you doing over there?
So our church, I guess we're going to be partnering with this mission that's over there. So the mission that we went to is called Musana. But yeah, no, they're just all about teaching the community how to, you know, take care of themselves and not depend on people. So it's just an incredible organization. You can check them out, musana.org, see whatever they've got going on, and maybe contribute if you want to. So,
cool, man.
So were you doing videography then?
Yeah, so the whole reason, back to why we went there, we kind of set up like this conference that we were going to do where we would play music for the kids in the high school, and then we have somebody teach for 30 minutes, and then we play some more music. And the kids, like the first day, man, they were like just shocked because they had never seen like an American rock band is what they said that we were. I mean, we had electric guitars, bass, drums. We played the first song and their jaws were like on the floor, like, I don't know if this is real. Like, this
dude, I should never go to Africa. That would be dangerous for me because I would just want to like kind of take advantage of that a little bit and just convince everybody that I was like, oh yeah, I invented Tupperware.
Well,
you know, you could, all the things that I secretly aspire to be, but I can't, I could convince them that I am.
Yeah.
Yes. Whoever invented Tupperware, let's pause for a second. Whoever invented Tupperware is a genius. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, okay, let's not get on a tangent, but dang, that stuff is cool. Okay, anyways.
But let me tell you about the power over there. They run on 240 volts. We show up and we rented a PA system and they bring it over and we notice that there's no plug on the amp.
Just hardwire it?
Just bare wires. Just two bare wires. And we're like, hey, this doesn't have a plug on it. He puts it in his mouth and strips both those ends of the wires with his teeth and then just stabs them into the outlet. So it's like, it was the craziest thing. Like,
I'm just imagining something out of a cartoon or something.
Yes.
Wait.
It gets better.
I'm just confused because that's how I do it in my shop.
Oh, is that how you do it?
I always cut that weird like three-pronged thing off my tools when I get it. But anyways, whatever. Go on.
I know. Yeah, I mean, we thought it was crazy. But the guy that was with us was like, yeah, just so you know, they're really lax about electricity over here. And we were like,
so.
No kidding. Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking. Well, speaking of shocking, so as we started playing, how we listen to ourselves play, we have in-ear monitors. But if I were to hold that pack with my left hand and then hold my bass and touch any of the electronics or knobs, tone, volume, anything, I would ground myself and shock the heck out of myself. So like the first day I'm like, I held on to the pack and then grabbed my bass and literally lit myself up. And I was like, whoa, what was that?
That's an electric bass.
Exactly.
Just another day in Africa, man.
Yeah, just another day. But it was crazy. We're like, this power is just insane. Man, they're just like, whatever. If it turns on, it works.
Dude, you got to admire that a little bit, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're a little too overboard with safety and stuff. Like, so what?
Maybe a little bit of safety is good, though.
I don't know.
But, I mean, nobody died, so I guess it was fine.
That's a win.
A successful trip right there.
That's
right.
I mean, by the end of the week, we were all kind of having fun with it. We were like, how long can you hold on to it? Ride the lightning a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, dude, when you pee crazy on the electric fence as a kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did that once.
Did it make the hair on your head stand up? Oh,
no.
Wait. Never mind.
It sure didn't.
Because you don't have any.
That's a bald joke. That's right. No, but we did that, and I filmed just absolutely everything. And came back with almost 100 gigabytes of footage.
Ooh.
If we were doing something, I was filming it, and it was
so it's pretty it was much awesome. Just like an average day in your life normally.
Yeah.
Cool, but, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a blast.
What about you, Jason? What's been going on?
Oh, you know, just a day in the life, working away. I got drawn for a pretty good hunt. I go hunting every year, and I got drawn for a good deer hunt this year, so
I'm stoked
about that.
Is that something you do every year?
Yeah, well, I used to do it a lot as a kid. I'd go hunting with my dad, and then there was an incident, and then I couldn't legally hunt for 5 years.
Wait a minute.
I picked it up a while ago. So then...
What is this incident?
Did you shoot yourself in the foot?
No, okay. So this happened, it was actually on my 18th birthday. I was living in Oregon. My parents are still living in Arizona. And I'd go hunting with my dad every year. And so I flew down to Arizona to go hunting with my dad. We were in a new unit we'd never been in before. We had deer tags. And there was this like hill that went up and then it dropped off into like this big ravine on one side. And then like, you know, there's another hill on the other side. And so I started like hiking up the side of this hill. And then my dad, he was going to hike the opposite direction down this like dry riverbed, right? It's just starting to get light. Like the sun's just starting to come up. and I look across the ravine and I see this monstrous deer, right? And so I get like buck fever, kind of. My heart starts racing and I lean against this big rock to kind of like steady myself, and I sight, you know, through my scope, I see the deer, I pull the trigger, and I just watch it drop. And I'm like, whoa, I'm freaking out. And so I take off at like a sprint down into this ravine and kind of like sprinting up the other side in like, you know, full jacket, clothes, you know, long underwear, everything. I get to the top of the ravine on the other side and I notice a couple things like in pretty quick like order. First, I'm burning up, like drenched in sweat because I just sprinted in full winter gear. Number two, I look down at my leg and I'm like bleeding profusely all down the side of my leg and like out the side of my like waist area.
Whoa.
And three, the deer that I shot was a spike elk, which we did not have elk tags. We had deer tags, but the sun was like coming up behind it. So it was kind of like silhouetting it. And to be honest, it was a small elk. Okay. And so I shot it. Anyways, I looked down at my leg. I'm bleeding because what happened is I had all this adrenaline surging through my body and I leaned against this rock, but we're in Arizona and there's this big cactus growing out of the rock. And so I leaned like right on this cactus. So my whole side is just like covered in cactus needles. I'm burning up. And so I just start taking my clothes off and I strip down until I am literally completely naked. And I still have my boots on and I put back on like my little orange hunter vest because I don't want to get shot. And I start jumping around this dead elk naked, pulling these cactus needles out of my butt and my side. Well, what I didn't realize was up the hillside about another 500-600 yards, there was a hunter in a blind watching me with binoculars, okay? But he was far enough away that all he saw was me like see this elk, shoot it, sprint to it, strip down naked, and start dancing around this dead elk. And so he calls the Arizona Game and Fish Department. He's like, you guys got to get out here. There's this crazy guy dancing around this elk naked. And so I finally like get all the cactus needles out. I put my clothes back on. I started gutting out the elk because I didn't want to like waste the meat. Arizona Game and Fish shows up. They're like, hey, why'd you shoot an elk? Did you happen to be naked? All this stuff. Took me into custody. There's this whole thing. I had to explain that I wasn't crazy. I wasn't doing some like weird ritual. It was just an honest mistake. Long story short, they made me pay for the elks. They, you know, made me pay a huge fine, and I couldn't technically hunt for 5 years.
Gosh.
So
that's more than an incident.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to go into that. It's kind of a sensitive thing. No, it's not really. Bottom line is, I can legally hunt again. I've been hunting for years now. No incidents. I'm a very safe hunter, I promise. I got drawn for a really good unit. I'm excited about it. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Just keep your clothes on this year.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I'm excited to go hunting. So that's going to happen.
Nice. You've been busy in the shop, though.
Man, I'm busy. I am almost done with this massive project that I've been talking about. So I have everything done except for I got two more pieces to build. I have a dining table, which is going to be kind of a fun one because it's elliptical. So I get to pull out the ellipse jig, which is always fun to use. And then another little hutch for a dining room. But then that's it. I'm done. Woo!
Wow, that was quick. I thought you'd be doing this for months.
It has been months, man.
I started in July.
I guess it's been one month.
I guess when you rattled off that list of furniture, I was imagining that you'd be at it till the end of the year or something.
Dude, I know, but I have been.
Shows how much I know, I guess.
Killing myself on it. It should have taken that long, but I've been working like crazy. So I see a light at the end of the tunnel, though. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's great. Are they ready for it?
Yeah, it's going to be down to the wire whether or not I finish it in time or whether they're got to wait like a week. So yeah,
that's not bad.
The other thing is I've built all this furniture, but I've yet to like really finish any of it because it's all still piled up in my shop and I really didn't want to like put finish on it and get it perfect with me still, you know, bouncing around my shop doing other stuff. So my plan was to get it all built, and then once it's all built, then have just like a, you know, finishing marathon and finish everything and get it perfect and then deliver it. So
yeah.
Yeah, I guess once you set up for finishing, you may as well have several pieces to do.
Yeah, and I mean, only I have to paint one piece, which is kind of a pain. I hate painting. But everything else is just, you know, clear coat, so that'll be fine.
I'll come paint it by hand for you.
Ugh.
Well, I don't want it to look crappy. I want it to look good. Just kidding, buddy.
Right on.
So yeah, that's what's going on in the Bourbon Moth world. I'm really excited. I don't know if I had started this last time we talked, but I like woodworking on Instagram. That's really cool. But I want to be able to use that platform to talk about other things that I really care about and that I'm passionate about. And so a couple weeks ago, I started a new series on Instagram called Will I Fit in That? And basically, trying to just create a platform where people can understand like what I will and won't fit in.
Yeah.
I think it's an issue that needs to be addressed. And so I've started doing that. And so far it's been a good response. It's been it's been really encouraging to see people actually getting something out of that. Yeah. So
it's nice to see someone using the platform for a good cause.
Yeah, there's so much garbage out there and just mindless dribble. Like, let's not just fall into that category. Let's use Instagram to better society, right? Yep. And so if people can learn what I will and won't fit in, like, I feel like that's my way of giving back a little bit, you know?
I mean, every time you fit in something, it fills a little bit of me.
Yeah. See, like, this last episode, I didn't fit.
Right. It hurt.
And I've been trying to come to terms with that. And it's...
We all know you've been trying to fit in your whole life, Jason.
Yeah.
Ouch.
You get it, Blake. From somebody that doesn't fit in a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably understand where I'm coming from, so...
I think Nick just spit beer out his nose.
It almost came out my ears.
Oh, anywho, Blake, man, I watched an amazing YouTube video about your CNC.
Yeah.
Did you?
No, that's a lie. I didn't actually watch it. But I saw that you put out a new YouTube video about your CNC, and I watched the 1 minute preview on Instagram. And dude, I was actually, I don't say this very often, but that thing kind of blew me away a little bit.
You were almost tempted to go watch the YouTube video.
Yeah, he was almost tempted.
If there was a CNC machine on the International Space System, I think that's what it would look like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like inspired by NASA?
Yeah. Don't you think it looks like.
Yeah.
Do you think the NASA one would be inspired by the Weber wood shop?
Probably.
Oh, snap.
Ooh, how the tables have turned.
Probably.
Mm. That was the goal.
Space Force is going to be calling you up.
Yeah.
Needing your CNC abilities.
Yeah, I'm so stoked. I finally finished this thing. I've been working on it for, months now, and just finally got it done. And the video, too. I mean, it always takes forever to do those edits, and I guess I tend to think of those as more of long-term projects for my YouTube videos, not really the sort of short instant gratification how-to stuff. So I put quite a bit of time into that, and I'm happy to have it done.
Yeah, it turned out really, really cool. I love the flow and
Thank you.
I guess the overall feel of it was just, throughout the whole video, like I know when I'm watching a good video, when it's over and I didn't realize how long it was.
Oh, that's a good compliment.
That's exactly how I felt after I was watching it.
I like that. Yeah, that's kind of the goal. I had so much fun with that one and just the edits. You know, I really wanted it to have... I talked on the last episode about how I wanted to kind of do this big reveal, although I regretted it, not sharing more along the way. But once I went down that route, I kind of committed to it. So that big reveal was a lot of fun, and I got a lot of great feedback from that thing. A lot of people said it was kind of mind-blowing and entertaining and all those things that I wanted to hear. So it's been a lot of fun to get the feedback.
Yeah, I got to say, my CNC is super jealous. Like, I didn't do any of that stuff for it. I got a surge protector.
You got to build him a home.
No, I got a surge protector for it. That's it.
Oh, Gary's really jealous.
Oh, yeah.
Has Gary seen it?
Yeah, because he built your CNC.
No, I'm not going to show that to Gary. He'll be like, what the hell, man? You don't love me? Wait, why don't I get all this cool stuff? No. Gary's not allowed to watch. Just kidding. Gary's his own person, I promise.
You don't let him out of the kennel to watch YouTube videos?
I promise Gary can make his own decisions. Oh, Gary. So here's the important question, though. So you have, I mean, you spent countless hours getting this baby all, like, tuned up and honed in, and it looks like something out of an alien movie. Do you know how to use it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. I've been using it for some really basic stuff, and I've talked about how I was using the free software that came with it is great for some basic stuff, and I've been playing around with that, but I want to force myself how to use Fusion 360, and I actually started making a video about that today. So today was all about, I got that video posted finally, so today I was like, I'm going to start using this thing to build projects. So I actually had most of the day, put some Walnut in there, started flattening it and getting it all dimensioned so that I knew what I had to work with. And I started filming, and I said, I'm going to use this as an excuse to force myself to learn that program. And it came to a screeching halt. It was like
already?
Well, I started diving into the software to design this thing. And I thought I've been learning how to use this thing for a few weeks, but finally putting it to practice, and I'm just getting stuck left and right. So I have a whole new appreciation for it.
Dude, I think what you need to do is you need to put yourself in a situation where like failure isn't an option, or like increase the stakes a little bit. Like whenever I'm really under the gun on a project and I really need to move fast, I always tell myself like, okay, you're in Germany in the 40s and the Nazis are coming. Like if you don't get this done and get out of here, you are going to die. You know?
No, it's funny you're going to die. And I know you're totally joking, but that was literally the mindset that I was in today. No, I mean, that's exactly the mindset that I was in today. I had a set amount of time to work in the shop. My wife was going to watch the kids. And I was like, I'm not going to default to the easy route on this. I'm going to learn how to use Fusion 360. I'm going to design this thing. I'm going to keep the design really simple and just start from the basics. And it was just a failure. I thought that I was going to go from start to finish on this project all in one day, and I didn't even get close. Mm-hmm. But it's going to have to wait till the next time I can get out here and work. But I am determined to design and build that thing with Fusion 360 and this new CNC machine, because that's the whole purpose. My goal was to use this simple first project. I just want to build a little box, but that was the idea, is to use this simple first project to learn how to use the tools and the software.
Well, if you're just wanting to learn Fusion 360, what a lot of elderly people will do is they'll find a course at like a community college. Maybe that could be something you could
try. it's no joke. I wish there was somebody local that I could use as a tutor, because the online stuff, it's like I'll watch a video 10 times and then I'll try to put it to use and actually go into the program and do what they say, but for some reason there's always something that doesn't look the same as it does in the video, and I just keep getting stuck. And I'm fairly computer savvy, and there's a lot of other programs that I use. But I guess one of the big problems is that I've gotten really good at using SketchUp, and my brain just thinks like SketchUp, and I can't get past that. So I don't know.
I was going to ask you.
Nothing that I do in Fusion works the same as SketchUp.
You get that muscle memory of like, you know, key commands and how you do the mouse and this and that. Like I use SketchUp all the time. And then, you go into a different program and you just want to do those same things and it doesn't work. And that's what drives you crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've used I've used SketchUp for, probably 10 years or something. And just nothing that I do in Fusion works the same way as SketchUp. Everything's just a completely different
way of thinking.
And you can't
make it in SketchUp and then just send it to Fusion?
No, it's just not the same. It's a completely different...
I feel like there's somebody out there listening and they're like, oh, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I know nothing about what I'm talking about here. So somebody's probably going to say, oh, I'll teach you how to use it. But
hey, I want to take this moment to say to our listeners, if you think that Blake is completely wrong, please send him a DM and tell him that he's wrong. And also how he can, improve himself.
I'm sure I am.
But mostly just tell him he's wrong.
But yeah, just tell me he's wrong.
About everything.
Yeah. Well, does the Fusion 360 have any kind of like keyboard shortcuts that you can switch over from like SketchUp? Because I mean, a lot of other programs
does
that.
Yeah, when you first start the program, it actually gives you options like how do you want to set this up? And it has examples from 3 or 4 other CAD programs that people are used to.
Yeah.
None of them are SketchUP. They're all more sophisticated CAD programs. But I know that there's a lot of keystrokes and a lot of carryover, but I'll get there. I'm just in that like steepest part of the learning curve where I'm just starting out and everything just seems foreign to me. So
yeah.
But I'm determined. I'll get there.
One day.
And that's why I'm using this first project, something simple, to just use it as a learning tool for myself.
Yeah.
I believe in you, man.
Thanks. But that video is out. It's out on YouTube, and it's actually been doing pretty well for me. It's getting about 3,000 or so views every day. So for my videos, for my little channel, that's a win.
That's
dang, man.
I know we talked about Instagram on the last episode, and what I see with stuff like this, like Jason mentioned, I posted this sort of 1-minute teaser video on Instagram, and the numbers on that took off much faster in the beginning, and it was climbing. The YouTube one much slower, but then you see this fall off after about a day and a half on the Instagram video, where that one peaked out at about 5,000 views or something like that. And then the YouTube video just kind of, you know, it's the sprint versus the marathon. It just kept ticking up. And so I'm hoping that's going to be one of my bigger videos. So if you haven't checked it out, go see it.
If it's not one of your biggest videos, I will be shocked.
It's going to be the first YouTube video of yours that I watch. Does that help at all? I'm going to watch it.
No, I'm sure that'll be a huge help.
Okay.
You go do that. And let me know what you think when you finally do.
All right, I will.
Thanks, man. You're the
Nick
best.
Nick has built it up to be pretty epic. So.
It's really good.
All right.
Thanks.
My son likes this YouTube channel, and it's just a pair of hands unwrapping different cars.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Ooh.
Yeah, my kid that's, likes the same one.
If it's any better than that, I'm in.
I don't know if I could top that, but you can let me know. Why don't you ask your son what he thinks?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll show it to him.
Oh, man. Yeah.
He's a pretty harsh critic.
Oh, we got to do a new maker. I think it's Jason's turn this time. So
I got
Jason,
one. Oh, my gosh. Do I have one? Okay. You guys, guess who's on Instagram and has started posting woodworking stuff?
Who?
It's my boy, Gary.
Oh, no way.
Gary.
The CNC whiz from Corvallis,
Gary.
Oregon.
Yeah.
Gary is on Instagram.
Welcome
check it out.
Instagram.
If you go to Instant Gary Mix, that is InstantGaryMix. Instant Gary Mix. He is on Instagram. He has started posting woodworking. He doesn't have a lot. He's only got 5 woodworking posts, but they're pretty
good. That's a good start.
So check this out. If you look at his feed, the very last post that he posted, he has designed himself from scratch his own folding camp table, okay? It folds up to like a suitcase size with a handle.
Whoa.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's beautiful, right?
Yeah, is that...
Yeah, it's got some incredible detail
in
there, too.
It's got some like inlaid purple heart and walnut, and yeah, it all folds up, and then you can just unfold it when you're like camping or picnicking or whatever. It's actually really cool. I've seen it in person.
Dude, Gary, you are legit, man. Welcome to Instagram.
Yeah.
He is legit, so go follow Gary. He has 112 followers right now, guys, and we could easily get him to 115.
Yeah.
Okay?
No problem.
Yeah.
Do it to it. Gary, not only with being an awesome woodworker, he is doing an awesome job setting up my CNC, and he's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy. And ladies, he's single.
Ooh. Oh.
Yep.
Why did
I don't actually know that for sure. I've never asked, but he seems single because he's out at my shop a lot late at night. Maybe I should check with him.
Yeah, you're going to want to verify that.
Well, if you're single, lady, and you're interested, just DM him, and we'll see what happens. Okay? Okay, new maker, Instant Gary Mix.
That might get somebody in trouble.
Go check him out. Okay.
That's a good follow, though.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to segue right into our topic, which is YouTube today. We did Instagram last time, so today we're going to talk about YouTube. But before we do that, I think we got to hear a word from our sponsor. Jason, what do you got for us this time?
All right. So we've all been there. You're in the shop, and you need hearing protection, right? And so you grab your, you know, ISO tunes, you grab your earmuffs, you put them on, it blocks out the noise, they work great. But let me ask you a question. Have you ever been in a client's home and been wanting hearing protection because your client won't shut up? Well, today's episode is brought to you by Customer Hearing Protection. It's hearing protection that you can wear in customers' homes to drown out the annoying noises of over-interested customers telling you what to do, telling things you aren't right. You can drown all that out. With customer hearing protection, you don't need to listen to those stupid customers anymore. Just put on that hearing protection and glide into your own soundless world, free from any anxiety or pestering clients. Customer hearing protection. Get yours today.
I could use those in my own home for my kids.
Oh, yeah.
You thought I was going to say my wife.
Yeah, I totally did.
No. Good save. No, honey.
Good
I know
save.
You're listening. Thank you, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Oh, and also, I want to take this moment to say, if you're looking for someone to build your furniture, come to me. I'm a
yeah. So our topic today is YouTube.
YouTube.
The YouTubes.
All right. Let's dive in first with the history of YouTube. Okay. Let's talk about this crazy thing, YouTube. How did it get its start? Does anybody know where it started?
On the internet?
Yeah. But do you know why it started? I just learned this the other day. It's super interesting.
Is this going to be a joke?
Jason would never joke.
No, this is not a joke. This is fact, okay?
Okay, let's hear it.
Now, I might get some of the facts wrong, but this is generally the spiel, okay? There were some guys, and they were watching the Super Bowl, right? And it was Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. And he goes over and grabs Janet Jackson's outfit and rips and wardrobe malfunction. Boom, right there on live television. Yep. We all remember it,
the
right?
The slip.
Well,
I do.
These guys were like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And got on the internet and were like trying to find this video. But there's no place on the internet to find videos like that. And they're like, dang, there needs to be a place where people can upload videos so that everybody can find them. Boom, they invented YouTube.
Really?
All because of Janet Jackson's boob. Now you know.
I wasn't really sure where he was going with that either, but I'm impressed that I've heard that, and that's actually the real history behind YouTube.
So
Jason did his homework.
Wow, you can substantiate his story.
I absolutely can. I've heard that too. That is the real truth.
Wow.
Yeah, so now you know. And 100%. Now, those guys, they don't need to get on the internet to find a wardrobe malfunction because they got lots of money. So women are probably wardrobe malfunctioning for them all the time. Maybe we shouldn't wander down this path. Okay. Anyways, YouTube. Let's talk about it.
Well, why don't we hear from the grandfather who has all of the subs on YouTube?
All of the subs.
But that's fair. We talked about Instagram last time, which now granted, your numbers on Instagram aren't amazing, but you did just hit 5,000.
Yeah, congrats.
Right?
Congratulations. Yeah.
But in the three of us, you are the low dog on Instagram. But switch over to YouTube, the roles have
a little more
been reversed. The tide tables have tabled.
Yes.
Turned.
Something like that.
Up.
Yep. Because, Blake, you have how many subs on YouTube?
Actually.
Oh, you're pulling what I did last time.
Yeah, he's got the number written on his hand.
I'm going to
pull that up. He's look at the number.
Let's see. I'm sitting at 23,265 as we speak.
Wow. Right here.
Okay, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it's been fun to watch that number grow, and I still consider my channel very small, especially in the scheme of like all the people that I follow and that I like to watch. But
yeah,
I've had a good run. It's been a lot of fun.
I didn't realize how many subscribers some people have. Like April Wilkerson just hit 1 million subscribers.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's a lot.
Insane.
Yeah, that is.
My channel's tiny. But
not to demean you. I'd rather watch your stuff. Sorry, not to say mean things about April. I'm just sorry. I'm wandering down a dark path. Anyways,
I'm happy with that for the fact that it grew to that number after about a year of posting videos. So that's kind of the one thing that I'm proud of. And then I kind of backed off for a little while. I took probably a 6 or 8 month hiatus and didn't really post anything for a while. And big surprise, the channel didn't grow at that point at all. But now that I've started posting, actually just as of, you know, from that last video that I posted 3 days ago, I think I've already gotten another 1,000 or so subscribers just in the last couple of days. But yeah, it's coming along.
Yeah, I'd say it's more than coming along.
Let me ask you this. Okay, first of all, I'm going to be asking a lot of questions here because I am on YouTube technically, but I'm definitely not like a YouTube person. I just don't do it a lot. So I'm just curious about a lot of this. So first off, let me ask you, What is your like goal with YouTube? Are you trying to educate people? Are you just trying to like create videos that like are interesting that people can just kind of see into your world? Like, what's your overall like drive to put content on YouTube?
Well, because I still consider myself a hobbyist when it comes to anything woodworking and the YouTube channel, I didn't want to do what a lot of people do, which is the how-to video. So you see just thousands of videos that are kind of DIY, how-to, everything is a start to finish. This is where I started. This is where I ended on a project. And a lot of people go there for informational content. And I do too. I look at YouTube for, like, for example, I want to learn how to use Fusion 360. So I'm going watching how-to and tutorial videos. So that's that kind of content is great, but it wasn't really what interested me. I wanted to just do something that was fun, that was entertaining, and maybe inspirational. So that's the whole idea behind my channel. So what that means is my favorite thing about my channel is that I kind of have full freedom to just film the parts that I want to film, maybe emphasize certain things over others that I thought were more interesting, and I don't have to capture every part of a project. I can kind of leave out maybe the parts that didn't go so well or that were just boring and just emphasize on the fun stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, Nick,
yeah,
you're on YouTube.
I am.
How many subs do you have on YouTube?
I just checked. I have 668.
Really? I thought you, man, this whole time I thought you were like this big YouTube guy.
No, no. So I started my channel last year, but only used it to host my stories from Instagram. So like when I would do like a produced, edited story that was like a minute and a half, because this was actually before they introduced highlights on Instagram. So if they were disappear, they would just disappear. So I was saving them and using YouTube as like my archive for it. So I only had up like 10 or 15 stories that were like a minute long with no description, no tags, no good thumbnails, you know, just random Instagram stories. And I didn't care if I was growing at all. So it's only been probably like February, March that I actually started putting out like actual YouTube videos, but it's been so infrequent.
And what are your videos? Like, what are they geared towards? I mean, because I've never watched one. like, are they how-to? Are they like highlights? What are they?
So
he's just playing advocate for the audience.
Right, yeah, he is. Yeah. He's totally devil advocate.
Right.
I, a lot like Blake, I didn't want to come out and say, this is how you need to do things, because I don't know how to do things. I mean, I'm learning as I go with woodworking. So if I was doing a woodworking video, like let's say my coffee table video that I made earlier this year, I literally just said, I'm just going to film this, try and do some creative angles, you know, work some editing, and just show you how I made it. And that's going to be it. So if whether you can follow along with how I'm doing things or not is not like my primary objective. It's pretty much just... Are you entertained by watching me make these things? That's pretty much everything I do in the shop. But I also have some videos that I had this grandiose idea that I was going to do this like every other week kind of vlog video, because vlogging is pretty popular and you can grow a pretty good following.
It's so in right now.
I don't know if it is right now. I think everyone has stopped kind of vlogging, at least all the people that I've been watching.
It may have kind of peaked a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of work. Yeah. It's a lot of work.
That's true. Yeah.
What defines a vlog?
Just a video log. Like if I were to vlog.
So wouldn't like stories on Instagram technically be a vlog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Actually, that's a perfect example. Yeah. You're basically just pointing the camera selfie style at yourself and kind of taking people through whatever you're doing either that day
or guys,
project.
I've been vlogging this whole time and I didn't even know it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
You should start a YouTube channel.
Well, I'm a vlogger.
Oh, wait, you did.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah. So my videos are kind of all over the place, and I never really set out with the intention of this is what my channel will be. I kind of have the benefit of not caring. You know, well, of course, everyone cares whether or not they grow and people watch your videos. Because
I kind of stopped growing when I hit like 16 or 17, though.
I'm still growing. My stomach right out straight out.
Oh, right, we're out. Talking about getting fat.
Yeah.
Oh, physical growth.
Physical growth.
Okay, see what you did there. Yeah. So are you enjoying the YouTube, though? Is that something you think you want to continue, like, doing videos and putting it out there?
Yeah, I love making videos. I mean, that's what I do with my day job. I make videos all day. But it's different because I get to do exactly what I want in the shop with making stuff. But on the flip side, because I don't have a really big following on YouTube, I don't see huge numbers of people watching it. So I don't quite get the same like satisfaction about making the videos. Does that make sense? Mm. So like,
yeah,
it's hard to keep going when I know that, I mean, some people may think that's a lot of people, and I kind of feel that way. That's a lot of people that are watching my...
Yeah, but you're seeing like hundreds of thousands of people watch your videos when you post them on Instagram.
Right, right.
So I could see how that, you know, going to YouTube and seeing a fraction of that could be a little bit discouraging.
Yeah, it is a little
bit.
But
I know like a lot of YouTubers will like, they'll make a YouTube video, but then they'll use that YouTube video like spliced up in a bunch of different pieces for content on their Instagram. So are you doing that with your YouTube stuff or no?
No, I haven't been. I should be. I mean, that's like the smart thing to do. But I've
been trying to do that lately. I've been trying to use my YouTube videos as a way to kind of cut almost like segments of the YouTube video that are specifically designed for Instagram. So that's been something that I've been working towards, where I'll have kind of that cinematic ooh and ah sequence that I usually put in the middle of each of my videos. I'm trying to format those so that they're exactly 1 minute long, and then I can throw them into Instagram. But that's only
that's
been
smart. It's like your yeah. YouTube video is like a pizza, and then your 1 minute segments are like that pull apart garlic crust that yeah. pulls off the end.
Exactly.
And you can pull a piece off of that and throw it on Instagram. That's a smart way to do it.
Yeah.
I only recently figured that out, but it's been working well for me.
Ah, that's super
smart. Yeah, I need to do that.
So
more
you
often.
Are consciously, so Blake, when you're making videos at this point on YouTube, you're consciously thinking about how you can also integrate that same content into Instagram.
Yeah, just recently I've been trying to do more of that and design certain parts of, because I think it's a lot harder to do things in little segments designed for an instant gratification Instagram type platform and then try to splice those all together for a YouTube video. So my main platform is YouTube, I feel like that's a little bit of an advantage because I can just take little snippets of that, or as I'm editing it, keep in mind like the main format for Instagram is a minute long for a main post and that sort of thing. So keeping certain segments so that they fit within those parameters.
Yeah, that's my whole mindset that is wrong, I think. I am more of a Instagram first, YouTube second. And if I just flip that, I'd have more content for Instagram. But I'm not as like focused on certain projects like this. These shelves I'm still working on, which, by the way, I'm still working on. I haven't filmed one bit of them. I've taken some stills or some like, you know, 15 to 30 second videos with my phone, but I didn't plan on doing a video of this, and I totally should have, but you live and you learn.
You live and you learn.
Yeah. That's one thing that I've noticed is that one of the hardest things to do, I think, is both. You know, if you're thinking that you're going to design your content for YouTube and you have more of that long-term vision and the storytelling for the long format video, then there's differences like horizontal versus vertical video and all these things that just aren't compatible with the two platforms. So
right.
Well, and they do that.
Trying to do both is the hardest thing to do that I'm
Well, they do that on purpose too, because Instagram's biggest competitor is YouTube.
Right.
And so they don't want it to integrate well. They want you to choose one or the other, and they want you to choose their platform. So, I mean, it's not coincidental. It's by design. But you say the hardest thing to do is to do both, which I can see that. Let me tell you what I think the hardest thing to do is, and I'll tell you a little story, okay? Once there was this little boy named Jason, right? And he started a woodworking company, and he got on Instagram, and, you know, he was posting stuff, and people were liking it, and he was selling furniture, and he thought, hey, I got an idea. Let's start a YouTube channel. So I got all excited, and I went out, and I bought all this camera equipment, a nice Canon camera, and tripods, and microphones, and all this stuff, and I made a video. And I was like, dang, that's a lot of work. I don't know if I'm ever going to do that again. That was a couple of years ago.
Hey, And that's the end of the story.
I made, okay, to be fair, I did two videos. Both of the videos were 20 minutes long, which I thought was like really long. You're going from like a minute max on Instagram to here I am doing a 20 minute video. But my issue is, so both you and Blake and Nick, you're doing furniture and woodworking like as this hobby on the side, where me, it's my full-time business. And so for me to at all try and integrate YouTube into that, it's like this one more thing that's just a time suck that I have to do. And that's where I haven't been able to figure out how to do it. It takes me so much time to make a YouTube video that it makes building a piece of furniture take like three times as long.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things that was I was actually thinking about as I was kind of mulling over this podcast topic and working on that project today, is that if I was doing my project today as a client project, there's no way that would work, because I was trying to learn a new skill, which was the software, and learn how to use this CNC machine. I was trying to film it, and I was trying to build something, and all three of those were just not compatible time-wise. Yeah. And that's part of the reason I just got to the end of the time that I had, and I was like, wow, I got nothing done today. It's a huge time suck. There's no doubt about it. Making videos has to be, unless you're just purely making money from the actual videos themselves and you're just a straight up content creator, the video part of it has to be something that you're just as passionate about as the woodworking.
Yeah. Well, that's so, the thing. If you look at the YouTube community, I would say 95% of the people on YouTube are either A, like hobbyist woodworkers that have another full-time business, or B, they're full-time content creators.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of people that are full-time, like client-based woodworkers that have like this thriving YouTube channel on top of that. And I could be wrong. I mean, I'm sure there are some.
Yeah, there might be a few.
But not the majority.
No.
Yeah, not the majority. Because it's hard. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a baby. It's hard.
It is. And one thing that I think about is, if someday I'm going to do the content creation as more of an income and more of a job, I think the one thing that I would outsource right away that I would have to would be the editing, because at least my videos in particular are so heavy on the editing. They're very custom, cut to the music and all this kind of fancy cinematic stuff. So,
they're heavy on that because that's what you like love. You love doing those edits and those like interesting angles and like piecing it together in a fun way. Do you really think you could outsource that to somebody else? Like, let that go?
I couldn't.
I could. And oh, really?
No, I don't think I could
at all.
Well,
so for me, I like doing the editing, but I like doing the woodworking more. And then second to that, I like doing the photography part because I have this photography background. The editing is something that I'm brand new to. I enjoy it. I like the challenge of it, but it takes a lot of time. And that would be the first thing to go for me. It's kind of like the last thing that I added into my skill set. And it's the thing that I'm the least proficient at. And it's also, if I could just be in the shop, just building and shooting, and then turn that footage over to somebody else and they could do the editing, as long as I had a budget to pay for it, I'd have no problem letting that part go.
Mm, that's interesting.
Interesting.
It's very, because I'm on.
So one person.
Well, I was going to
say. One person that.
One of you guys shut up and let the other one talk.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, I find that interesting because I'm exactly on the other flip side of it, because I do it professionally, that I would not be able to let the reins go at all. And because that's like my baby.
And you'd probably see little things that you're like, oh, that's not how I would have done it. Yeah. Or they could have done this and made it really cool and they didn't do it.
I'd be like, you need to cut that three frames ahead or three frames back. Or, you know, I would nitpick this and that to death on the final edit. I think I would take just as much time.
I know
time.
What you mean.
You know, I would make a
this
final
This is why
pass.
I don't have an employee in the wood shop. The exact same reason. Because it's so hard for me to let those things go.
Yeah, it's wild.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Jason, if you ever did have somebody like just doing the videography and the editing for you, and they were just following you around, that might be a way that you could really take advantage of the YouTube platform. Is that I have a feeling, because you're so busy, you're building so much furniture, and it's stuff that people like to watch, and obviously they're following you on Instagram. If I actually think that a videographer and an editor might just pay for themselves in your shop because you've got the content. You just don't have the time or necessarily the experience with the video editing, editing
part. No, and I've definitely thought about that. And I, please don't hear what I'm going to say as like trying to be like, you know, bragging or like I'm all this or that. But I did these two videos on YouTube. I mean, I spent a lot of time on them. They're 20-minute videos, but I have two videos on YouTube. And I have, I'm just under 4,000 subscribers, which, I mean, lots of people have a lot of videos on YouTube and don't have that kind of subscribers. And I'm not saying like I'm amazing or anything, but I look at that and I say like, there is this untapped like potential other thing that I have here. And I'm definitely not capitalizing on it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, one person that comes to mind is John Malecki because he talks all the time on his podcast about the struggle of being somebody who his primary business is building furniture and woodworking.
Not
and
anymore.
Actually building products. But he has this whole other side of content creation that he, well, when you say not anymore, you mean he's like shifted more to content creation?
Yeah, he's only
content
now.
Like you're absolutely right. That's where he used to be, just where I am. And it was too hard. So he just went full into content creation. So that's all he does now is content.
So he's not even building custom furniture for people anymore?
He is.
Only if it aligns with his content creation.
Correct.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So he would be a similar model or somebody to talk to about starting out on the product side and then kind of migrating over to the content creation side.
Yeah, where I look at my schedule and it's like I'm booked out through March of next year right now with like builds. And I'm like, I do good in the environment of always kind of being a little stressed and just having a ton of work to do. But I am always like a little stressed because I'm having to meet these deadlines and get stuff in and out of my shop as quick as I can. And so when I look at that and I'm like, oh, it'd be fun to do a YouTube video on this project unless I brought in a videographer that could just film it, edit it, and I really could just build. Yeah, it would just be so impossible for me to do those kind of videos. But I will say this. I think my problem that I ran into before was I was trying to do these full start to finish build videos. Like, here's a video of the entire build, and this is every step of the build and how I did it. Because for me, when I started making videos, my goal was to make a video that somebody could actually watch and gain enough knowledge that they could go reproduce whatever I was making. Because that's how I use YouTube. I get on YouTube because I'm trying to figure out how to do something. So in my mind, it's like, if I'm going to make videos, I want people to use it the same way that I use it. But what I think I could use YouTube for are just like short videos. Maybe how to, like, this is how you build a door or whatever. But more like, honestly, the funny crap I put on Instagram, like the new segment of Will I Fit in That, I feel like if I start throwing that stuff up on YouTube, even though it's like shorter,
yeah,
potentially I might get some traction there. I don't know. We'll have to see.
I think you absolutely would. And you talked on our last episode that was all about Instagram about being genuine to who you are. And as soon as you started doing that on Instagram, you had this huge following or it started growing fairly rapidly. And I think if you applied that same concept to the YouTube, you talked earlier today about how you're a vlogger and you kind of had this realization that you're a vlogger. Well, I think a vlog would be the perfect format and the perfect style for your channel. Yeah. If you had somebody to just follow you around, film it and edit it for you, and then you didn't have to touch it, I guarantee that thing would pay for itself just from the ad revenue alone because you've got interesting, you know, knowledgeable woodworking and you've got the humor and the personality and all that that you could put into it. So if they just kind of filmed whatever you happen to be doing that day, not a start to finish project, and then you inject your humor and
then
all your things into it.
I'll say this. If you're listening to this podcast and you're a videographer in the Willamette Valley, Oregon, send me a DM. Let's do this thing.
Dude, you are going to blow up with DMs. Man. I'm sure so many people will take you up on that.
Yeah.
I think you should do it, man. I think it would blow up.
I would do it. I will say this, okay? Now, I can't say too much about this because this is top secret classified information, but I actually have on my schedule a very special project coming up in September, and I already have a videographer booked to come out and document the entire thing. We are going to do a not a super lengthy video, but there will be like a longer video that will go on YouTube, and we're going to do a bunch of stuff on Instagram, and it's going to be pretty... It's going to be something that I honestly believe Like, everyone's trying to figure out the next big thing in woodworking, and I honestly think this is going to be, like, one of the next big things. So I'm putting a lot of energy behind it, so stay tuned for that.
So you're
it'll be out in the next
you're turning a pin
month or so.
It's epoxy pours, I just know it.
I'm not saying anything, okay? I don't want to give anything away, but it's going to be pretty awesome.
Oh man.
So maybe that will be like a jumping off point. Maybe I'll experience having a videographer filming stuff and me not having to do it, and I'll be like, "Dang, this is awesome," and I'll do more. We'll see.
You get addicted to the limelight.
Stay tuned for that. We'll definitely do some posts on Craft Will Never Die when that happens, because it's going to be cool.
So everybody go follow Jason on YouTube. He could really use it right now.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Tomorrow, I made a little teaser video that I posted like 2 years ago about like, "Hey, look, I'm on YouTube. Go follow me." I'm going to do like a flashback Friday and post that teaser on Instagram tomorrow morning. I'm going to be like, "Hey, if you're wondering, I got two videos on YouTube. go subscribe."
So one question I wanted to ask was about style. And that's one of the things that I've struggled with the whole time through. I've been posting videos on YouTube is kind of that concept of finding your style, trying to figure out what kind of videos that you want to post. We kind of just talked about Jason's potential for YouTube and what maybe direction to go. But like for me, in the beginning, I didn't have a clear idea of should I do DIY? Should I do tutorial kind of videos? Or where should I go with that? And that's, especially since that's mostly what was out there. So Nick, I'll pose that same question to you. How would you kind of describe your style and what was the process for getting there?
I wouldn't say I have a style yet. I'm probably still in the searching phase. Like, because I do this professionally, my biggest hang up with doing YouTube is kind of my own ego. Like, because I have to...
I've always thought that.
Right? The cat's out of the bag. Well, because I'm making the thing, filming the thing, editing the thing, I have a lot less control over all of the things all at once, if that makes any sense.
You have less control?
Yeah.
No, that doesn't make sense. You'll have to explain
okay,
that.
So when I make a film professionally, I'm behind the camera usually. I'm usually the camera op or directing 100% of the time. So I have full control over the camera of what it's seeing, what it's shooting, what it's focused on.
I get what you're saying.
If I'm making, I have to set the shot and hopefully hit my focal point. If I'm using autofocus, hope it doesn't focus on something in the background. You know, and if I'm doing something that's like a one-time take, that I've only got one piece of wood that I'm doing this on, then if I don't make that shot, it's, you know, either the video is done
so
or...
So you have the footage that you have. That's
right,
all you got to work with.
And that's it. So
gotcha.
I'm used to being like in control of what I'm making, what I'm filming. But being on the other side of the camera and being behind the camera at the same time is tough. So like I had this idea that I would be able to make these great videos, but not being in control of everything all at once has made it really difficult for me to be like, you know, if I don't get it, I don't get it, and I'll work around it. But it's kind of one of those things I've learned to just be like, I'll just kind of hope for the best with this. You know, I'll shoot a little bit wider. I won't be as tight on this so I don't miss what I'm doing, that kind of thing. And it's hurt me because I've wanted to be more creative with stuff. I wanted to do some wild angles and this and that, but not being able to see what I'm shooting really hinders that kind of thing, which I would think, you know, having somebody follow me around would be just ideal because they'd be able to exactly get, you know, whatever I'm doing. But the other thing is, like, I'm so used to putting out really high-end content that, like, filming myself in my one-car garage feels kind of cheap. Like I don't know another way to describe it. Like I'm not in a really cool looking environment. My shop isn't really like laid out nice. I have like one corner that I pretty much always shoot towards because I have my nice wooden sign that says Key Woodworks. And that's kind of
so this is what you should do, Nick.
What?
You should dig a really big pit.
Oh my gosh. Okay? I'll just borrow Blake's pit.
Yeah. And then just film in there.
There's probably room.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that. I just feel like today the answer to everything it's is the dig pit. A pit, man.
Yeah.
No, but I would definitely say with stuff like that, like that's 99% in your head. Nobody else is looking at
oh,
that.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah.
Most of the people that are watching those videos are like below your skill and your like tool accumulation and all that. And so they see your one car garage full of like, you know, CNC and all this other stuff. And they're like, this guy's awesome, you know?
Right. Oh, no. I mean, I totally have come to realize that it's all in my head. I mean, I...
Well, not all of it. I mean,
well,
some of it
yeah,
cheap.
Okay. Well, like 75%.
Yeah, right. There you go.
But the advantage that you've got is that you understand storytelling. And I think that is probably one of the biggest key components to any YouTube video or any kind of media, really,
yeah.
is the storytelling aspect
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, story is king.
If you can do that, then it really doesn't matter what kind of backdrop you have.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it helps because I have this idea of, you know, the beautiful looking footage. And, you know, I don't always get that in my shop, but... And then I just, you know, will get on YouTube and quickly see that most people are filming with potatoes. So whatever I shoot is much nicer quality, you know.
Define a potato.
Security camera footage.
Really? So like
any camera that shoots less than quality video footage.
Yeah.
Well, like an iPhone. Is that bad?
Man,
you can get some great shots with an iPhone, though.
Yeah.
I think if anybody out there is listening and they have ever thought about starting a YouTube channel or creating video for any media outlet for that matter, and all you have is a cell phone, start taking video because, you know, you can do some great stuff with those things.
You have like a Samsung Razor. When he says cell phone, he means like a new smartphone.
Yeah, that's true. The newer smartphones, the technology is so good on those things that don't ever let that hold you back. Because one little secret that I'll tell you guys is that probably a third of the shots that I put in my YouTube videos are actually right from my cell phone. Because I use that as a second angle on a lot of things. I use it for the slow-mo. I time-lapse videos, a lot of the time-lapse videos where I'll have my main camera shooting in real time, but then I'll set that thing up just up in the corner on a little GorillaPod and make a time lapse so that I can get both, and then I can cut back and forth between the two in the video. But I mean, that thing's a powerful tool if you can utilize it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just got an email the other day from a lady, and she's like, hey, I follow you on Instagram and I love all your videos and pictures. My husband's getting into woodworking and wants to get on Instagram. I really want to get him like some cool camera equipment for his birthday. Like, what kind of stuff do you use? And I was like, my iPhone and a tripod.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah, until you feel like you've figured out how to use that thing to the full extent of its abilities. And I mean, if all I had was an iPhone to make the same videos, I don't think you'd notice a huge difference. It would just take me a little longer, and I would have to maybe take my time a little bit more setting things up and, you know, but I could probably make a very similar style video on my phone.
When you guys are shooting in your iPhone, what are you shooting in?
4K, 24.
4K, 24.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, everything 24.
What about for like slow-mo? Do you switch it up for slow-mo? Because I found that there's a certain setting, I can't tell you what it is because I don't remember, but if you do just the regular slow-mo, like, under the lights, it does the like with the lights. You
that's
know?
Your shutter speed.
But if you if you switch it up, it doesn't do that.
Yeah, it probably does that at 240 and not at 120. Because 120 is double the 60 hertz of your lights.
Science. Okay. Anyways, I fell asleep during that last part. But
and actually, Nick, that's one of the things that you've done quite a few videos on your channel, right? You've kind of emphasized the actual videography part.
Yeah, I've put out a couple videos about videography. So if you want to learn more, you can go to my channel. I've got one specifically on cinematic settings. So that help out a lot of beginners who are in the DSLR world or video camera world that don't exactly know what's going on, you know, how to get that cinematic look. That cinematic is like the word, it's like a buzzword. I put it in my video that I'm dropping tomorrow. So by the time this podcast comes out, you should have already watched this. But it's on my Africa trip, and I totally put cinematic in the title. because it's a buzzword, and everything is cinematic now. Doesn't matter what you're filming, it's got to be cinematic, right?
Doesn't say cinematic on here anywhere.
It's in the fine print.
He's looking at his camera.
Yeah.
I don't even use this. This is a paperweight. I'm holding right now a Canon EOS 750D. I don't know if that's a good camera. I got on Amazon.
It's a great camera.
I still use my iPhone. This literally is dusty and it's sitting next to my computer.
All right. So last time when we talked about Instagram, we kind of went around the table and we all laid down our best tips for Instagram. So today we'll put it on the table for YouTube. So why don't we start with Jason? What's your best tips that you can give for any kind of, maybe instead of just YouTube in general, we'll just say any kind of filming or videography or YouTube across the board?
Okay, I'm actually excited because I genuinely have a tip. I don't normally because I'm not good with all like the technical videography stuff, but I just figured this out the other day and this has helped me out tons because I was noticing when I was filming videos that a lot of them, like the video quality and clarity just wasn't great. And so what I've started doing is when you set up your iPhone, whether it's on a tripod or like leaning against something, before you hit record, what you're going to do is take your t-shirt and you want to wipe that lens off.
Yeah.
Oh, because
there's dust, there's dust and fingerprints, and I found ketchup on there the other day. And all of that stuff affects the quality of your video.
Yeah.
I never knew. Also, did you know, you guys knew because you're smart, but if you have the camera on portrait or on selfie mode, it's way less quality. It's not HD.
Nope.
Oh, see, I didn't even realize that because
yeah,
I don't
on
do
your
a
iPhone.
Lot of I don't do
it's
a lot of
HD.
Selfie mode stuff.
Because yeah. I used to flip it around so that I could see what I was filming because it was easier. So now what I do is I have a little mirror that hangs off the back of my tripod so that I can see what I'm looking at and still be in HD.
That is a good tip.
Well, I just gave three tips. What?
Whoa. Yeah.
I'm better than Nick. All right. Blake, what's your tip?
Let's see. Storytelling is huge. I think if you want to get into YouTube, that should be where you start. I don't really think it matters what equipment you start out with. If you're thinking that before you start that YouTube channel, you got to go out and buy a new camera, I think that's completely the wrong line of thinking. I think you should just use what you have, even if it's just an iPhone or a smartphone, modern smartphone, because they're great. You can do a lot with those things. And then the next thing I would say is lighting. If you want a certain look, I would study the YouTube videos or the videography styles that you like and that you want to emulate and start thinking about what kind of lighting they're using. I started out in this shop with great task lighting. It's perfect for working. It was a ton of these, like they're the mini, what do you call these things? The fluorescents, but the
CFL?
They're daylight. I don't know what they are, but they're very bright, daylight balanced, and there's a ton of them in here. So you flip those two switches and this thing is like basically sunlight, which is great for working. You can see what you're doing. But my videography, I didn't like the look of it. Everything was just flat, perfect, evenly lighting, and just very boring. So I started adding what in the photography world you would call hard lighting, which is smaller points of light around the room, maybe lower, not all from the ceiling, so that I gave each one of them their own switch so I could switch them on and off and change and kind of sculpt the lighting depending on the task, depending on what I was trying to shoot video of. And I could give it more shadow detail that way.
That does sound like hard lighting.
Yeah. The main thing you're going for there is shadow detail, which if you want that cinematic look, you need more shadows and not necessarily just blasting everything with light.
Contrast.
Contrast, exactly. And the last thing I would say is that I spent a lot of time struggling with what is my style going to be in terms of the type of videos that I'm releasing and all that. And even to this day, every time I post a video, I'm reevaluating, I'm changing, you know, I'm thinking about maybe I should go to more of a vlog style and I've thought about completely changing it up. But I would say just jump in and start making videos and don't think that you're going to have everything figured out from the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great tips. Here's my tip, and it's just one tip: audio.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because we're on an audio podcast. Good audio will make or break a video, because research has shown that people will watch a terrible video if they can understand it and hear what is going on. People will not watch a beautiful cinematic movie if they do not understand what is being said, or if there's distracting noises, or if there's just noise in general. So do yourself a favor, get a decent mic, turn off your air conditioning in your shop if you have to, unplug the refrigerator, do whatever you got to do to kill all those noisy hums that just you cannot get rid of in post. Because if you try and get rid of them in post.
Yeah, audio is one thing that, like, it drives me crazy when you can't hear good. So I'm always trying to have, like, the best audio possible. Gosh.
It's like nails on a chalkboard to me. Oh, it's the worst.
Hey, I will say, this is another tip. I got, it's a Rhodes, what is it, a lapel? Is that what they call them? Lapel mic?
Lavalier.
Lavalier mic, but it's awesome because it's wireless, and so you got like the receiver that clips on your belt or in your pocket or whatever, and then it hooks into your iPhone. Yeah. I use it on my iPhone, and it sounds amazing. Yeah, I mean, and the distance on that is great. You can be like across the yard, and it still sounds great.
I noticed you were using that in the Will I Fit in This when you went inside of the laundry chute, and I was like, he's mic'd up. I'm really impressed.
And it sounds good because I did a couple videos early on and I just hated the sound quality, so I did some research and I found that thing, and super easy to use. It's kind of expensive. I think it set me back almost $400, but it has been worth every penny. I use it all the time.
It sounded great.
Oh, thanks, man.
Awesome. Well, we got to give a shout out to our patrons. So Nick, what do we got this week?
We have a new guardian, Stated Woods Company.
Nice.
Nick Leonard. And we owe him a haiku.
Yeah, we do.
So, Jason, what do you got?
Okay. I spent I woke up early this morning around 4:30. I went outside. The sun was coming up. There was a light dew on the grass. And I sat just in silence and meditated and tried to get some words that would be fitting for Stated Woods Co. And this is kind of what came to me. Stated Woods Co. is fancy like a blue tiger eating a dark world.
Oh, man. That was deep.
That's it.
That's it. I hope that does something for you on an emotional level. And Stated Woods Co., thank you very much for your guardianship.
Yes, thank you very much.
It's Guardians!
Thank you, Nick. Also, we can't forget our boy, Zach Martin of Georgia Crate Company, our other guardian.
Yes. Yeah.
He got his haiku last week.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Or last time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we don't want to forget our other patrons who also listen after show. We really appreciate all your patronage. So if you want to join us over on Patreon, you can search for us there, and we'll also put a link in the show notes so you can click on it and find us real easy.
But that's right. Also, all the money from Patreon, it doesn't just go to us. What else does it go to,
Nick? No, 25% at the end of the year is going to go to our Craft It Forward program. Right, Blake?
We are absolutely going to make sure that that money goes to a high school woodshop somewhere in the U.S. who is in need of some woodshop funding and equipment.
Yeah.
Or like that'll a potentially awesome viral YouTube startup, you know.
Or not.
Probably not.
Put my foot in the ring. Okay, but probably more likely a cool high school woodshop. Yeah,
we'll go that direction.
Yep, that's what we're going to do. But now we're going to head over to the after show for all of the patrons that are going to join us there. And if you're coming to the after show, it's gonna be pretty crazy because I'm gonna tell what really happened on that hillside after I got naked next to that elk. But you're only going to find out in the after show. So come hang out, check it out. You will not be disappointed. Let's hit it.
Right on, everybody. Well, thanks again for joining us for episode 10 of the Craft Will Never Die podcast. We're going to head on over to the after show and talk even more about YouTube, but we're going to go in depth on some of the numbers, sponsorships, monetization, and some of those juicy details. So if you want to listen in, just join us on Patreon. Everybody from the $3 level on gets access to the after show. So we'll see you guys over there.
Bye, everybody. Have a nice week.
See you.